I'm going to be studying this prayer of Jonah on Wednesday evenings. I'm not sure how many sessions we will have, but we're going to be looking at this prayer of Jonah. And I trust and pray that as we look at Jonah's prayer, that it will encourage us in our prayer life. Can I just say to you that, of course, I pray for all of you daily. And one of my prayers is that during this time of isolation, God will burden us, He will move us, He will teach us to pray, that we would become a praying church. That really is one of my great prayers for us as a church during this time. Now, this evening, I want to look at just verses 1 and 2. We're just going to look at the first two verses. And it says, then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. And I just want to bring two things this evening. I'm not going to be very long. I would like us to spend time in prayer. But I want to bring a couple of things this evening. I want us first to look at the example of Jonah. The example of Jonah. Do you know, it is one of the more remarkable things in the Bible that we learn lessons from good men and women, godly men and women, devout men and women, and we learn lessons from rebellious men and women. I wonder if you've ever thought of that, that in the Bible, there are these godly, faithful, devout men and women, and they have much to teach us, and the Bible records their stories, and their actions, and their prayers, and because they're all there to teach us things in our Christian life. So that, of course, is very obvious. We have these godly, devout, faithful men and women, and we are to learn lessons from them. But the interesting thing about the Bible is that there are these men and women who went through rebellious phases in their lives, and those are recorded, and surely they are there for our instruction. The New Testament says all these things were written for our instruction. And it's very interesting that when Paul writes those words in his first letter to the Corinthians, when he says these things were written for our instruction, he's actually referring to rebellious Israel in the wilderness. That's what he's referring to. He's quoting from the time when Israel in the wilderness, on their way to the promised land, they were at a rebellious phase, and they had actually turned to idolatry. And Paul picks on that incident. And Paul says, these things were written for our instruction. So Paul says, you look at rebellious Israel in the wilderness, and there are lessons there for us. And you move on in the Bible. You're still in the wilderness. You look at Moses. I was referring to this on Sunday, and how he, instead of speaking to the rock, struck the rock. And of course, that's there for our instruction as well. You look at David and his great sin with Bathsheba and killing Uriah the Hittite. Again, that is there for our instruction. All of that is recorded that we may learn from David's example. You look at Solomon's polygamy, actually, and Solomon's idolatry. And again, that is there for our example, for our instruction. You go on into the New Testament. I once, when I was in Nairobi, I pulled out everything that J.C. Ryle says about Judas Iscariot. I went to his expository thoughts on Matthew, and everything he says about Judas Iscariot, and then to expository thoughts on Mark, expository thoughts on Luke, expository thoughts on John, and pulled everything together, everything he says about Judas Iscariot, and we produced a booklet, 7 Lessons from Judas Iscariot. And they were wonderful lessons, actually, sad in many ways, that this terrible man had such important things to teach us. And I remember some of those things, the danger of loving money. You know, Judas Iscariot loved money. And the dangers of a false religion, a superficial religion, because he claimed to be a disciple of Christ and claimed to be an apostle of Christ. And outwardly, he appeared to be a disciple. In the upper room, when Jesus said, "One of you will betray me," none of them turned to Judas and said, "It's you, isn't it? We've seen how you are, and we've realized that your religion is superficial." Nobody said that. They didn't doubt Judas, didn't think to themselves, "Judas is the one." Because Judas was so good at hypocrisy. Well, you see, that's a lesson for us. We can, if we're not careful, become very good at outward religion, at hypocrisy. It all becomes a show. We can become very expert at putting on a performance. And while all the time there is no faith, no love for Christ, no desire to love his people and serve Christ. So even Judas Iscariot has lessons to teach us. Well, I want to look briefly this evening at the example of Jonah. And the lesson I want to draw from Jonah is this, that when Jonah was in a crisis, he prayed. When Jonah was in a crisis, he prayed. You know the contents of chapter 1. This is one of the best known books in the Bible. And you know that God appeared to Jonah and God gave an instruction to Jonah, go to Nineveh, that great city, and go and preach against it. And Jonah goes in the opposite direction. He doesn't want to go to Nineveh. So he tries to go to Tarshish. And he's on his way to Tarshish on this boat. And everything on that boat is wrong. You look at chapter 1, and everything about it, it's almost like it's written in such a way to bring to our attention how wrong everything is. Here is a prophet who should have been going to preach, but he's silent. He hasn't told his fellow sailors anything about him. We know this because later they questioned him. And here is a prophet who's meant to be going to Nineveh, but he's on his way to Tarshish. And here is a prophet who during the storm is supposed to be praying, instead of which he's sleeping. And the idolatrous sailors are the ones who are praying. You look at chapter 1, everything is upside down. The prophet is silent, is not preaching the message of God, but he's sleeping. The prophet is silent, he's not praying to his God, he's sleeping. The idolaters are the ones who are praying. Everything is upside down. Because Jonah is in a total mess. Rebellion leads us into total mess with God. This is what rebellion does. It destroys our lives. And Jonah is in a complete mess. And so you read the whole of chapter 1, and you read all this mess and all this rebellion, and even the captain goes to him and says, "Don't you want to cry out to your God? We're all praying to our gods. Why don't you pray to your God?" He has to wake him up. And he has and say to him, "Why don't you pray? We're all praying." So you see, everything is wrong. So you come to the end of chapter 1. If you're not familiar with this book, you're reading it for the first time. You come to the end of chapter 1 and you think, boy, this guy is so far from God. He's in such deep, deep rebellion. And everything about him is wrong. And because of that, he lands in a complete mess. They throw him overboard and God sends a fish. And the fish comes and swallows Jonah. So when chapter 1 ends, verse 17, and the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. If we had come to the end of chapter 1, you were reading this to somebody, you'd never heard of the book of Jonah. And you'd say to him, "Now what do you think happened in chapter 8? Well, probably Jonah went into further rebellion. Somehow he tried harder to get away from God, and his rebellion became more and more pronounced. But you look at chapter 2, and it's an extraordinary first verse. I wonder if we realize just what an incredible verse the first verse of chapter 2 is. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. And here is a rebellious man on the run from God, but he has lessons to teach us. We must never say of anybody in the Bible, this person can't teach us anything. All these stories are there. The godly people are there and the rebellious people are there, all of them for our instruction. The Israelites in the wilderness have lessons to teach us, and David in his sin with Bathsheba has lessons to teach us, and Judas in his hypocrisy has lessons to teach us, and Jonah in his rebellion has lessons to teach us. And I bring this lesson to you this evening, that this rebellious man, when he found himself in a crisis, prayed. He remembered his God, and he remembered that there is a God to whom he can pray, because he remembered that his God is the sovereign God. You remember when the sailors challenged him, and they say to him, I'm just going to get my glasses, and they say to him, look, who are you? Where have you come from? And he says to them, he says, I am a servant of the living God who made the sea and the dry land. Verse 9, I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. So even in his rebellion, he is very mindful of this. God is sovereign. God is the one, verse 9, the God of heaven, which is a phrase meaning the sovereign God, God who sits in heaven and rules the universe. And then to underline this sovereignty, who made the sea and the dry land, meaning he made everything. Isn't it interesting how inconsistent we can be in our Christian lives? He knows God is sovereign. He knows God rules everything. He knows God rules the universe. He knows God rules the dry land. And God rules the sea. There's nowhere on this globe that God doesn't rule. You go to dry land, God rules there. You go to the depths of the sea, God rules there. He knows this, and yet he tries to run away from him. This is the inconsistency of rebellion. This is the foolishness of rebellion. Rebellion is action against what we know to be true about God. This is what we do when we rebel against God. We're going against what we know to be true about God. We know God is holy, and yet we rebel. And he knows God is sovereign, and yet he tries to run away from him. So he knows God is sovereign. And finally, when he's in a great, great crisis, you have verse 1, then Jonah prayed. I was looking at the passage this afternoon, and those three words jumped out. Then Jonah prayed. And it I don't think it's ever occurred to me with this much power. What a remarkable statement that is. This rebellious man who's done everything wrong in chapter 1. The whole of chapter 1 is upset us. All wrong. But then chapter 2, first verse, then Jonah prayed. And it's a wonderful reminder to us, friends, that God's people are a praying people. And God's people turn to their God at a time of crisis. When there is crisis in their personal lives, they turn to God in prayer. David had a crisis in his personal life. He'd fallen into sin with Bathsheba. And there was this crisis there. And you read Psalm 51. He comes to God in prayer with a prayer of repentance. When there's crisis in the church, God's people come in prayer. You read in the book of Acts, when the apostles were imprisoned, the church would gather for prayer. When the apostles were threatened, chapter 4 of Acts, the church gathered for prayer. When there's crisis in a nation, God's people gather for prayer. And God calls them to prayer. You read, for example, in the book of Samuel, that when the Philistines had defeated the Israelites, Samuel comes before God in prayer. You read in the book of Ezra, you read in the book of Nehemiah, when God's people were at a very low, the nation of Israel was very low, men came to God in prayer. And I just bring that simple statement to you this evening. We are God's people, and God's people are known to be a praying people. Can I encourage you, even this evening, when we come to a time of prayer, let's have a good time of prayer. Let's have a time of prayer that lifts our spirits. Let's have a time of prayer that encourages us, that's memorable, so that tomorrow when we're sitting again at home and we're feeling flat, you feel low, and perhaps you're alone, well, it'll at least encourage you. God's people prayed, and it was a lovely time of prayer. Now that's in our hands. Of course, we must ask God to help us. But we are the ones who are asked to pray. So friends, let's come to God in prayer. Don't be backward in this. You can't use shyness as an excuse or anything like that. God commands us to pray. God encourages us to pray. You read the teaching of Jesus. He taught his disciples to pray. And then he gave them the parable of the unjust judge. And it says, then Jesus gave them this parable, that they should always pray and not give up. So we're commanded to pray. We are taught to pray. We're encouraged to pray. And we are given every encouragement to come into the presence of God. Let's make our prayer times memorable times, times when God meets with us and our spirits are lifted because we've come in the presence of God. Jonah prayed. He's an example to us, a lesson to us. So that's the first thing I had for us this evening, the example of Jonah. And then the second thing in verse 2, the grace of God, the grace of God. He obviously wrote all this after all his experiences. This book was written after Nineveh had repented, and it's like a memoir. Jonah is writing everything that happened. So he says in chapter 1, God called me and I tried to run away. And then he reports what he did in the belly of the whale, in chapter 2. And he says this, it's a lovely phrase. Again, when you look at verse 2, it really stands out. Here is this rebellious prophet. In chapter 1, he's done everything wrong. The prophet is meant to speak. He's quiet. The prophet is meant to be a man of prayer. He's asleep. But the prophet is supposed to be a testimony to God's holiness. Here is a man running away from God. And then he says in chapter 2 and verse 2, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. And he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol. In other words, I was in total distress. I was about as far from God as it is possible to be. I was in the depths, as far as the depths can go. I was that far in the depths. Out of the belly of Sheol, I cried. And you heard my voice. Isn't that a wonderful statement of God's grace? You know, if you ever need encouragement to pray, look at how often God has graciously answered prayer. You look, for example, I refer to this Moses in Numbers chapter 20. And God has said to Moses, go and speak to the rock. And Moses strikes the rock. An act of rebellion from the leader of the people. And as I said, the waters came out abundantly. God graciously answered a request. David has fallen into great sin. It isn't a minor thing. He has committed adultery with Bathsheba. And then he has her husband murdered. And then he comes to God in prayer in Psalm 51, possibly Psalm 34 as well. And God hears his prayer. Because Nathan says to him, God also has forgiven you your sin. We read, I've preached in the church on Manasseh. And you know, Manasseh was this terrible, sinful, rebellious king in Judah. And he sacrificed his own sons. He was an idolater, 55 years, and he was an idolater. And then the Babylonians came and took him off as a prisoner, and he was in a Babylonian dungeon. And the Bible tells us in a Babylonian dungeon, he prayed. And it says, and God was entreated of Manasseh. Or God was moved by Manasseh's prayer. And you go on into the New Testament and how often people have cried out to God. The number of people who came to Jesus with requests. And none of them were pure and holy and perfect. But Christ heard their prayers. Christ heard their requests for help. You have the centurion who wasn't even an Israelite. And his servant is sick and he comes for help. Now, you wouldn't say he was pure, sinless, perfect, righteous. None of us is. We're all sinners, human beings. But Christ heard his prayer. And whenever they brought the sick before Christ, he heard their request. Because God is gracious. I don't know of a greater encouragement to pray than this. And you know, if we don't pray, if we're not a prayerful people, we then have to wonder, do we really believe in a sovereign God and in a gracious God? I love that phrase in Hebrews chapter 4. We come to the throne of grace that we might find help in time of need. And that phrase, throne, is sovereignty. But it's not the throne of a dictator or a despot. It's the throne of grace. It's the throne occupied by a gracious God who loves his people and is willing to pour out blessings upon his people graciously. Jonah was in a total mess, disobedient, rebellious. Everything he did was wrong. And then in the depths, he cried out to God. And he says, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of the Sheol, out of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. So we have the example of Jonah. We are to be a praying people. Prayer is good for us. Prayer lifts our spirits. Prayer gives voice to our distresses. Prayer shows we belong to God and we trust God. Prayer shows that we are totally dependent upon God. Nothing glorifies God more than this, that his people acknowledge their total dependency upon him. Nothing offends God more than when we think we're perfectly capable of doing things in our own strength and by our own ability. Thank you very much. That is offensive to God. And it is honoring and glorifying to God when we come to God and we say, I can't do, without you, I can do nothing. You must help and you must help me in this crisis.